In fact, so the story goes, I had not raised $1 for the fund when I announced it, which was a sort of risky, calculated, you know, decision to just try and get the word out to people that this is what I'm doing. And again, just like, you know, just so much support from different corners of the community. And what ended up happening was what that turned into was 99.5% of the LPs in my fund are here in Kansas City.
The startup investment landscape is changing, and world-class companies are being built outside of Silicon Valley. We find them, talk with them, and discuss the upside of investing in them.
Welcome to Upside. Woo!
Hello, 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 and welcome to the Upside Podcast, the first podcast finding upside outside of Silicon Valley. I'm Eric Hornung, and I'm accompanied by my co-host, Mr. Insurance himself, Jay Klaus. How's it going, Jay?
Doing well. Calling in here from our Columbus Startup Weekend at Grange Insurance. I'm in a breakout room right now looking around at what I think to be key messages, key things to keep in mind. Actually, the name of this breakout room is the Not a Bad Idea Room. So maybe that's correlated to why we have things like key relationships and transformation and modernization and focused investments. And directly behind me, targeted growth.
Wow. You know what else isn't a bad idea? Changing topics and moving over to our intro.
Should be noted, listeners, that anytime Eric makes a nickname on this podcast, I don't know what's coming, and I'm just expected to respond to it. So you're getting it live.
You did a great job there. Today on the podcast, we are doing another one of our coffee chat series. I am very excited because this city for us has been a tough nut to crack.
Elusive. Today, we are talking to one of the staples of the Kansas City startup ecosystem, John Fine. John is the founder and managing partner of Firebrand Ventures, the venture firm that invests in the greater Midwest. We reached out to John. We had interacted with him a few times on Twitter, and he was just on our list as somebody who we thought seemed like he shared a similar point of view to us, or maybe we shared a similar point of view to him, maybe more appropriate. But his fund, Firebrand, invests in the Midwest, and he is based in Kansas City. We have not featured a guest on the podcast yet from Kansas City, but that will be changing soon, thanks in large part to John, besides this interview itself.
Isn't it crazy how much value Twitter gives us and just people in general who want to connect? I feel like it's like the LinkedIn that LinkedIn should be.
So much opportunity. If you know how to use Twitter in all forms, right? Like your feed can be worthless or your feed can be fantastic depending on how you curate it. Yeah, we've made several relationships based solely on Twitter, which, you know, comes from having our Upside FM handle. So plug for at Upside FM, but a bio that talks about what we're doing and a little bit about our show. And, you know, you just engage with people. People are looking at their activity. They're looking at their mentions. Access is easier than you think a lot of the time, I think.
Absolutely. And this interview is one example of that. So follow along with us at Upside FM on Twitter. Jay is at Jay Klaus and I am at EK Hornung. Enough plugging. Let's get into the interview. What do you think, Jay?
Yeah, let's talk to John. Please enjoy this interview with John Fine of Firebrand Ventures. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to be so plugged in and, dare I say, integral to the Kansas City startup ecosystem?
Sure, sure. So I'm not originally from Kansas City. I'm originally from Boston, Massachusetts. I actually grew up in a town called Brookline, which is right next to Boston. I went to college outside Boston. And then after college, and I had majored in psychology and learned soon thereafter that just was not the field for me. You know, maybe I didn't have the mental fortitude for that field. So I gravitated towards something I always knew and was comfortable with, which was technology. My dad had worked for Digital Equipment Corporation, and we had a computer terminal, not a PC, an actual mainframe terminal in the house. And so I was on that thing from the time I was 8 or 9 years old. I got into technology and actually ended up moving to California about a year after I graduated college. And it was an awesome experience. I was in San Diego for 15 years, and that covered the time of the dot-com boom and bust. And so during that time, I was fortunate to experience that not only in Southern California, but Northern as well. I was a part of five different startups during that time, and two of them had headquarters in the Bay Area. So, you know, it was a crazy, crazy time, and it was a great thing to experience on both sides of the bubble. You know, one of those startups I co-founded. So I have the whole founder experience of, you know, raising money and grinding out product development and getting customers and the whole nine yards. None of those five startups were hugely successful by any stretch. A couple were moderately, I would say. And then what happened was I ended up, our son was born in 2003. And shortly thereafter, I said, you know, I should probably get just a normal job for a while and take a break after having worked for five startups back to back. And so I got a job with a company at the time that was called Prescription Solutions. And they were sort of at the forefront of the mail order pharmacy business, sending prescriptions through the mail. They had outgrown their facility in San Diego, and they hired me to spin up their new operation in Kansas City. And so I joined them in 2005, and that's what brought me out here. I was traveling out here all the time. I loved it. I think we were ready for a change. I mean, Southern California is amazing. I miss a lot of things about living there, but it had gotten, you know, a lot more crowded and expensive than it was when we first moved there. And I think we were ready for a change. And so I relocated my family here in 2006, and that's what brought me here. And the interesting thing was I wasn't engaged with the startup community at that time when I moved here. And there wasn't much of a startup community at that time, I think. I was working for a big company. You know, we had gotten acquired by United Health Group right around the time I relocated to KC, which is also kind of when the fun stopped, because my first project for them in spinning up this operation in Kansas City was building an operation I was responsible for from zero to 1,500 employees over 4 years. And from zero to about $2 billion a year in revenue over that same time span. And so that was my life. You know, I wasn't in the startup world. I was managing these large projects for United. But, you know, as it often goes, after we were acquired by a large corporation, it got to be a lot less entrepreneurial and a lot more bureaucratic. And some people are perfectly okay in that environment. I'm definitely not one of them. So I started engaging with the startup community, you know, a few years after we were acquired by United. So it's probably like 2011, 2012. And I felt like I was, again, very lucky. That's when the startup community here, at least in KC, really started to take off. Google Fiber had come in. So, you know, the neighborhood where Google Fiber was first installed in the United States is in Kansas City, in a place that became known as the Kansas City Startup Village. So even though you might think having a lot more bandwidth isn't a huge catalyst, It actually was a big spark for our community. So that's a long-winded way of telling you how I got to KC and how I started to engage.
So let me just get the timelines right. 2006, you came to Kansas City. 5 years later, in 2011, you left this company that you were working with. It's 2011, you start getting involved in the Kansas City startup ecosystem. In its early days, what has changed between 2011 and 2018 in Kansas City? Because what I see now is that Kansas City is really blossoming and doing a lot of incredible stuff.
Absolutely. And I actually stayed with United Health Group right up until the time I joined Techstars as managing director. So I actually stayed with them through 2013. So it was a really interesting experience. I was working for United and I was attending startup events and meeting people in the startup community. And it was kind of like two completely different worlds. You know, so many things have changed for Kansas City since that time. I think it happens in steps, right? Like, it doesn't happen overnight. Brad Feld's famous book, Startup Communities, he talks about it's roughly, you know, like a 20-year life cycle to develop a real self-sustaining startup ecosystem. And, you know, I think Kansas City is 5 to 6 years into that. So I think that, you know, what happens is you start to have successes, you know, entrepreneur-led successes. So for Kansas City, it's companies like iVerify that was acquired by Alibaba / Ant Financial, you know, for $100 million a couple of years ago. It's C2FO, who raised a round of $100 million last year or earlier this year, I think it was. So it's been those types of steps on the entrepreneur side and the startup side. And then it's been sort of little validation points that, you know, every startup ecosystem seems to have. So it's everything from, you know, Uber coming into your town. And Lyft, you know, we have a WeWork now. Techstars came in 2013. we have, you know, a real smart city organization that was actually one of the seven finalists that lost to you guys in Columbus. So kudos to Columbus for getting that, for sure.
Love it.
And so I think that it's been a progression, you know, of these little milestones that, you know, each successive milestone sort of adds more excitement and credibility and vibrancy to the community. I think most importantly, it creates a cohesiveness around the startup ecosystem where it becomes easier and easier for founders to find each other, to find capital, to find customers. And, you know, so I think Kansas City's on its way. But like I said, you know, probably 5 or 6 years into that 20-year cycle. So definitely a ways to go as well.
So when you say Techstars came in and you were the managing director, that was of the Sprint Accelerator, right?
That's right.
And thinking back now, we may have crossed paths because I was with the Startup Weekend America's Summit that went to Kansas City in 2013 or 2014 to the Sprint Accelerator. What number branded accelerator was that for Techstars? I think it's probably one of the first, right?
It was early on. I think it was somewhere between, as far as active programs, somewhere between like 10 and 12 at the time. You know, they started with their city programs, which they refer to as the programs that are not affiliated with a corporate partner. You know, those are in all the big cities, most of them in the U.S. And then they started bringing on other corporate partners and experimenting with that model. And now they really refined it. And I think they have over, it's almost 45 programs now around the world. It's crazy how much they've grown. So it was pretty early days for Techstars. The cool part for me, selfishly, was that when I started engaging with them, it's actually a cool story because I had been engaged with the Kansas City Startup community for, you know, probably roughly about a year and a half. I didn't reach out to Techstars. They reached out to me through a contact I had met in the community here in Kansas City. So basically what happened is I got an email from David Cohen out of the blue. So I was like, why is David Cohen sending me an email? I don't understand this. This is pretty awesome to, you know, me flying to Boulder for a day. And that team at the time still being relatively small enough where, you know, I basically like met everybody, all the, you know, the key people in Boulder there in a day, had lunch with David Cohen. And at the time before I went, I had not envisioned like running an accelerator program. That just didn't seem to be the next step in my career path. I thought I was going to, you know, start another startup. But after I met the Techstars team, I was completely sold. I went from like, you know, on the fence to I got to get this job. You know, these are amazing people. You know, even after having transitioned from Techstars to Firebrand, I still feel the same way about them. So it was great to join Techstars at that stage where it was still relatively small, definitely felt like a startup themselves and just incredible people there.
You mentioned Firebrand. Can you talk to us about that transition from Techstars to Firebrand and why the creation of Firebrand? What was the impetus behind that?
Yeah, the creation of Firebrand was really a direct result of the experience I had at Techstars, which was, I'm sure you guys probably know, Techstars takes applications from startups from all over the world. And so every year, even here in Kansas City, you know, we had a really diverse, broad application pool. And what I saw was once we, you know, selected those 10 companies for the first 2 years, by the way, we didn't have any companies from Kansas City and we didn't have a lot of companies even from the Midwest. It just worked out that way. But what they all had in common was they were all building real businesses and they all raised $0 from Kansas City and in most cases, $0 from the Midwest. And so I took a step back after 2 years of doing that and seeing that and said, wait a minute. Okay, what's going on? Is this something they're doing wrong? Is this something I'm doing wrong? Is this something that is just fundamentally lacking in the investment community? And most of the answer I came up with was the last one. And so I just felt like it shouldn't be that difficult to raise an early seed round in the Midwest. But I just felt like this region was missing deals. And worse, a lot of cases, the startups were leaving and they were going to the coasts. And so that was the real impetus to start Firebrand after that third year.
What type of feedback did you get from the community when you started that?
Yeah, huge support. You know, I can go on and on about the people of Kansas City, and I'm rocking the Love KC shirt. You know, it just nothing but support. It was amazing. In fact, so the story goes, I had not raised $1 for the fund when I announced it, which was a sort of risky, calculated, you know, decision. To just trying to get the word out to people that this is what I'm doing. And again, just like, you know, just so much support from different corners of the community. And what ended up happening was what that turned into was 99.5% of the LPs in my fund are here in Kansas City. So, you know, I couldn't have asked for anything more. There was one of the first contacts I had in the high net worth community, who's a gentleman who's very, very well connected and a great connector. He doesn't need to do any of these things. He just loves to grow the community. And I went to him and I said, you know, I'm thinking about raising like $1 million in Kansas City and then going outside for the rest. And he said, no. He's like, forget that. You're going to raise the whole thing here. I can make some connections for you, get the ball rolling. This is what you're going to do. I said, okay, you know, if you're willing to do that, let's do it. And so that's what ended up happening. It was great.
And how much did you end up raising?
So the goal was to raise $7 million for the fund and have it just be a small, you know, first time seed fund. And we ended up raising a little under 18. So, and again, you know, it was vast majority for Kansas City investors. So it was, it went well. It wasn't easy. You know, it shouldn't be easy, I think, but it turned out really well.
We both read your recent blog post talking about your lessons in raising this fund, and it was such a great read. So thank you for being transparent and sharing that. What types of companies do you think could succeed in Kansas City? And if you want to extrapolate to the Midwest generally, go ahead and do that. But where do you think Kansas City or the Midwest really provides fertile ground?
Yeah, you know, the great thing about the Midwest is that each community has sort of its own value to add for companies. And it's not necessarily limiting as far as, you know, Detroit, obviously, you know, mobility, but you don't have to be a mobility startup to succeed in Detroit. Cincinnati with, you know, consumer/CPG, same thing. Indianapolis with MarTech, but they have grown enough so that if you are in that sector, that's awesome. And you're going to get a lot of resources. But even if you're not, that's okay too. For Kansas City, you know, it used to be ag/animal health. There's an organization in Kansas City that a lot of people outside KC or the ag industry don't know about. It's called the Animal Health Corridor. And so Kansas City is like the animal health capital, possibly of the world, definitely of the US. So the majority of sales of pet food, diagnostics, and animal pharma originate from companies that are based in Kansas City. And most people don't know that. It's like a group of over 100 animal health companies that are here. Obviously, if you're in that sector, this is a great place to be. But, you know, we have an awesome fintech community that has been outstanding. I mentioned a company called C2FO that raised $100 million in their last round. We also have a company called Bloom, which is sort of a high-tech 401k platform that's geared a lot towards millennials. They're doing extremely well. In fact, there's a fintech accelerator that just popped up. My friends at NBKC Bank just launched an accelerator specifically for fintech. So it's really quite diverse in KC. You know, we've invested in 4 KC companies. They're all different. Logistics is obviously another big area for Kansas City. You know, Kansas City is obviously has a pedigree based on transportation. You know, awesome, you know, central location for that, and a lot of great transportation companies to partner with. It's great. The diversity of the sectors really make it special, I think.
Are you guys still a seed fund, even though you raised almost or a little more than double what you were projecting?
Yeah, definitely seed. Our sweet spot is investing in rounds when a startup is raising, you know, somewhere between 500K and 2 million is typically when we'll invest. I really look up to, you know, because you see other funds out there where they start off as a seed fund and then they raise a bigger and bigger and bigger, and they get into Series A very relatively quickly in their succession of funds that they raise. And I really look up to, you know, other funds like Homebrew as an example. You know, they've raised slightly larger funds each time, but they've really stayed true to the seed phase because that's really what it is these days. In fact, Hunter Walk wrote a great blog post about how it's a phase, not a round anymore. So I think there's still tons of opportunity in seed, and that's just where I am. I'm personally most comfortable. You know, I kind of learned it at Techstars more than anywhere else, investing at that early stage. And so it's where I have the most fun, and it's hopefully where I had a little bit of value as well.
How do you go about adding value? I know that some people have like pillars of how they add value as a VC. What are your pillars or however you think about it?
Yeah, you know, I treat it very similarly to how I worked with startups when I was at Techstars. You know, so sometimes it's sort of part investor, part mentor, and 100% partner. Our whole approach at Firebrand is treat us like a partner in your journey. And we use the word journey on purpose because, you know, we've been founders, and I have an amazing advisory board that includes people like David Cohen, Wendy Lee, Brian McClendon, who created, you know, Google Earth and Google Maps, and just some amazing people that have all been founders. And so there's a lot of empathy there and knowledge that this is not going to be a straight upward line. This is going to be a crazy ride. And there's going to be twists and turns and mistakes and ups and downs. And we want the founders to know that we're there. We've been there and we're there for them. And we're going to help not just when the times are good, but hopefully more than anything when the times are bad. And if they can trust us to confide in us, we're not going to judge them or lord over them or anything like that. You know, we're going to roll up our sleeves and solve it for them. You know, Mike Maples used a great term called co-conspirator. You know, he sees himself as like a co-conspirator in there and with his startup founders. And I really relate to that. So that's the approach we really love to take and the value we add. Each startup is different, needs different things. And yes, I tend to spend a little bit more time with our earlier stage founders than later stage. So it can be anything from strategy advice, making connections for anything they need from, you know, customers to new hires, to just being there for that midnight call or text message when everything's hitting the fan, you know, and they just need an ear, right? They need a sounding board. So that's what we want to be for them.
So with Kansas City being in your estimated year 5 or 6 of this 20-year journey, help me project forward and think about what needs to continue to grow in Kansas City for the next decade plus.
Yeah, I know. I'd say recently there's some awesome progress in just the quantity and quality of startups that are in this community. It used to be that everybody knew everybody, and that's not the case anymore. I was just having this conversation yesterday with, I don't know if you guys have read Startland News. It's like the main startup publication in KC, and they themselves are a great connector, and they hold events from time to time. And we were just talking yesterday about how even as recently, probably as 3 years ago, if you attended a startup event in KC, it was the same people that went from event to event, right? And so the events were fun, but they were more just like parties, and you knew exactly who was going to be there. I attended an event the other day, and I literally probably knew, you know, a handful of people out of, you know, the 60 or 70 people that were there. So it's grown immensely from a quantity and quality standpoint, and the sources of funding have grown as well. So just in the last few years, there's been probably 4 or 5 funds that have popped up that have been launched and raised money and actively making investments, all sort of different approaches. So that's fantastic. It still has a ways to go in other areas. So, you know, again, that book, Startup Communities, that Brad wrote is so great because I always sort of come back to it in my head when I'm thinking about what Kansas City still needs to sort of cross that next milestone. Like I said, you know, every Midwest or every startup community is different, needs different things, and has strengths and weaknesses. I'd say with Kansas City, corporate engagement is still an area where we need to improve. It's gotten a lot better over the years, especially sort of the mid-sized corporations have really engaged with the community. I'm still looking for a lot more engagement from the largest companies in Kansas City that I think would have a lot to offer. And then also, you know, just there's always room for improvement and engagement with the universities. There's some fantastic universities, some right in Kansas City, some, you know, a 40-minute drive from Kansas City like KU that have huge pools of talent. I think we all need to, you know, just do whatever we can to have a two-way engagement with them to really create a nice talent feeder into the ecosystem. It's happening a little bit, but I would love to see it happening more. And just, you know how it goes, right? It's awareness, and it's making, you know, faculty and students aware of their opportunities in the startup community. And, you know, these days, Kansas City is like everywhere else, like everybody's hiring. Every startup is hiring. A lot of startups are raising money and growing. And so a lot of that is just making sure that we have a talent feeder system locally.
One last question for me, John. When a startup that's early stage comes to you and they're asking you just for advice and saying, we're about to raise a seed round or even a Series A, what type of advice do you give those founders in Kansas City?
Yeah, you know, I think the thing that's overlooked here, like anywhere else sometimes, is the building of relationships. And so the first thing I tell them is don't wait until you absolutely need to start raising. Start engaging with people now. Get warm introductions to people. Grab coffee with them. you know, get to know them as well as, you know, let them get to know you and your vision for your company. I think that's super, super important. More important than anything else, everything comes back to relationships. And so I think specifically, even for Midwest communities, it's even more important. I think things happen with a lot more velocity sometimes on the coasts. Here, it seems to be a longer process of building trust. And so again, it's just that much more important to build those relationships.
Great. Well, thanks so much for being on the show, John. I want to be respectful of your time here. If people want to learn more about you or Firebrand, where would you direct them?
Yeah. Check out our website. Reach out to me on Twitter. I'm probably most active on Twitter than anything else. You know, accessibility is a big part of our approach. And so, you know, I welcome anybody who wants to reach out to me. You know, our mission in life is to connect with and invest in exceptional founders. And so always looking for those and always happy to help wherever I can.
Great. Thanks so much for being on the show. All right, Eric, we just talked with John Fine of Firebrand Ventures. Hot take, what did you think of that conversation?
I'm going to give you a lukewarm take. No, I'm just kidding. The one thing that I took away that I think was alluded to or talked about, but not really, we didn't really dive into it, was this idea that when John went to raise Firebrand, there was this guy, this mystery man, who said, absolutely not, you're not raising only $1 million here, you're going to raise the entire thing here. Like, that kind of advocacy, we need to find people like that, Jay. I just thought that that was so amazing, and we didn't really dive deeper into how this guy was connected, why he was such an advocate for Kansas City, and the Kansas City startup scene, but I love that. I love that.
Yeah, true. I think you and I find all the time that so much of life is just the people, right? And getting connected to the right people, and not just right people in terms of how can this person help me, but the right people in terms of who are the people that are aligned with my way of thinking and can really align with me and enroll with me on this journey that I'm going on for whatever it is. Similarly, a lot of the takeaways I had in this interview are actually similar to the takeaways I had from the blog post that John wrote that we both talked about and mentioned. The lessons from running a micro VC. He said his goal for raising the round for Firebrand, his initial goal for investment was $7 million. And that number stuck out to me because, Eric, you and I have talked about what a minimally viable micro VC fund would be. And the figure we've kind of come to was $7 million.
Yeah, that's funny. I think that there's these kind of just like truths out there, and people generally kind of center around them. It's like, okay, you want to raise a micro VC, what's the minimum? It's $7 million. It's like, I've seen it time and time again. And it is, I thought the exact same thing when he first said that.
Well, and that wasn't our first thought. Our first thought for a while was like, well, what it looked like to be 500K. And then it was like, okay, well, what about if it was $1 million? Well, what if it was $3 million? You know, you have Spearhead out there who offers up to $1 million for their cohort of angel investors that they're trying to train. We looked at 3 to 5, but the problem with that seemed to be you wouldn't have much capital to deploy in terms of follow-on investment. It seemed like the math that we were doing and the people that we were talking to who had been involved in small VC or micro VC, that kind of pointed us to the $7 million number. So you have some on reserve that you can follow on with some of the bets that you took that were winning and doing well. Also, though, on that note, $7 million was his initial goal, but he ended up raising a little under $18 million. And then he went on to say, actually, fundraising is never really done. Still fundraising. And I thought that was an interesting take too, because I had kind of been of the mind that you raise a fund, you deploy the fund. Eventually, sure, you're going to go back and fundraise, but I didn't think of it in terms of sort of a perpetual fundraise.
Yeah. And he mentioned that in terms of him, but also in terms of founders, you are continuously getting your story out there, because when it does come time that you need to, you know, put the pedal to the metal, you want to have those relationships in place. So it's like, okay, I want to raise fund two. Well, I've been talking to people for 2 years about the potential for fund two already. Same with a founder. If I want to, you know, fundraising isn't a set point in time. It's a continuous relationship building exercise.
It's also, and this is a nod to the new Drive Capital podcast, Differential. They were talking with the founder of Root Insurance, which was here in Columbus, Ohio, is here in Columbus, Ohio. And Alex Tim, the CEO of Root, was talking about their Series B. When he began raising the Series B, it was not because they needed capital. It was because investors were coming to them saying, I want to invest in your company. And I would imagine that's true for micro VC or, you know, larger VCs who have had some success in the past. Eventually, if you're doing really well, the market flips and people are trying to give you money. And that seemed to be a little bit of the case here in John's case, where people kept showing interest and the number rose from 7 million to 18 million, which is exciting for him.
Yeah, it is. And I think that that kind of plays into the idea that he hinted at from Hunter Walk of Homebrew of how it's not rounds anymore, it's phases. And I wish we would have asked a couple more questions about that and his interpretation of it. I've seen Hunter Walk mention that before.
Something else that stuck out to me about what John was sharing in this interview, he made similar points to something we've talked about here on the podcast, which is geography. You don't need to be inside the valley to start these companies. And not only is it more cost friendly to be outside of the valley, but a lot of these ecosystems have very specific value to add. He mentioned Detroit with mobility, Kansas City with agricultural and animal health, Cincinnati with consumer packaged goods. So for a lot of companies, it makes sense to be outside of the valley for very strategic reasons, not even just from economic reasons. And, you know, that's just a common refrain we keep hearing. And even though it may be getting trite as much as we talk about it, you know, we got to keep beating that dead horse and pointing to it because it's an important aspect of starting a company outside of the valley.
Did you really just use beating that dead horse after we just learned that Kansas City is the animal health center of America and the world? Really beating that dead horse. That's the route you decided to go down.
Beat the dead horse until a startup in Kansas City can help revive said horse.
Did you know that about Kansas City, though? The animal health corridor?
No, I didn't. And actually, if you would have said which city in the Midwest is the animal health corridor of the United States, I would have guessed Iowa City.
Why? Why is that?
Bias. I've been to Iowa City. I did a startup weekend event there and I talked to some of the founders. And I know that one of the startups we looked potentially bring on the show, won't name them, was in Iowa City and it was related to animal health. So on a data point of one, I would have made that snap judgment that was not Kansas City.
Yeah, that's why, you know, you got to have a statistically relevant sample size, Jay. One thing that I wanted to mention is just the stickiness of Kansas City. I think that you and I have talked about this city before. And actually, over a year ago, we both stayed in Kansas City on our way up to the Berkshire Hathaway shareholders meeting. But I thought that it was awesome that John made the move to Kansas City and then felt the gravitational pull there. That kind of speaks to the stickiness of once you make a decision to come somewhere. And maybe it's having a family, maybe it's some outside things as well. But he found an opportunity in Kansas City, was able to apply the skills, and also caught the wave up, which started in 2011 or so.
That's such a common thing we hear for many cities in the Midwest. It's something that I hear from people who relocate to Columbus. And I think as someone outside that city, it's easy to be like, yeah, really though? Like really? But it's true for people who go to those cities and experience it. I'm sure if I had gone to Kansas City instead of Columbus, in some ways I would have found a way to identify with that city and maybe grab onto that same gravitational pull that John was talking about. Could be true of Detroit. When I talk to people who join VFA or go check out Detroit, that's true for a lot of them. I think that there's just a lot of benefit and good lifestyles to be lived here in the middle of the country where people are a little bit, I don't want to say rooted in reality, but in some ways, you know, you're near a more representative sample of your customers and what most people in the market kind of operate like.
One of the things that I would differentiate my experience living in New York and living in Ohio is that everyone who lives in New York has a game plan for when they're going to get out of New York.
Interesting.
And I think it's a little opposite in Ohio. It's the place that you boomerang back to. Even if you aren't from there, you know, if you are one of your friends who came to Columbus, it's like, yeah, I don't have any time frame for leaving here. Whereas in New York, it's like there are people who are like, yeah, I'm doing exactly 8 years here and then I'm leaving to go X, Y, and Z.
Wow. I was just in New York City with my mom, as you know, and I couldn't get over the fact that everyone I saw on the train looked so much more unhappy than I'm used to seeing. Like, and it wasn't like angry or mad. It just seemed like they were like beaten down. And that's a hot take. By the way,
the city can do that to you.
I don't want to let this go too long before I make this comment. When we stayed in Kansas City on our way to Berkshire, I distinctly remember thinking of Kansas City as the nicest Midwest nice that I had ever experienced.
Really? For Have you been to Minneapolis?
Actually, good point. Yes. But I was in Minneapolis to see a Green Bay Packers versus Minnesota Vikings game, and I was a Green Bay fan. So probably tainted my experience a little bit. But the two things that happened in Kansas City when we were there, and we were there for like, what, 12 hours? Less than 24 hours.
Yeah.
One, I was taking out the trash of the woman who was hosting us, and somebody on a morning jog literally stopped her morning jog, took out her headphones, and asked me how my morning was going as I was taking out this trash. That was number one. Number two, we were looking for a record store, and these guys who were just out on their smoke break seemed like they would move a mountain to help us find an open record store. It was crazy. Anyway.
Yeah. So if you're from New York and you're sick of the middle fingers and honking, move to Kansas City. There you go. There's the pitch. All right, Jay. We are going to wrap it up here. It was an awesome conversation. You want to run people through how to connect with us?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So if you guys enjoyed this conversation, would love to hear what your takeaways were. We didn't touch on this, but I'd love to hear your take on John announcing his venture fund before he had raised a single dollar. That's like a crazy thing that we could dive into for a while. Love that. Anyway, if you guys have any thoughts, tweet at us at UpsideFM. You can also comment on this episode on Breaker. Breaker is our preferred podcasting app. Otherwise, if you guys have any thoughts, if you know somebody who could be a good guest for our show, if you could be a good guest for our show, feel free to email us as well, hello@upside.fm. All right, we'll talk to you next week. That's all for this week. Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's guest, so shoot us an email at hello@upside.fm or find us on Twitter @upsidefm. We'll be back here next week at the same time talking to another founder in our quest to find upside outside of Silicon Valley. If you or someone you know would make a good guest for our show, please email us or find us on Twitter and let us know. And if you love our show, please leave us a review on iTunes. That goes a long way in helping us spread the word and continue to help bring high-quality guests to the show. Eric and I decided there are a couple things we wanted to share with you at the end of the podcast, and so here we go. Eric Hornung and Jay Klaus are the founding parties of the Upside Podcast. At the time of this recording, we do not own equity or other financial interest in the companies which appear on this show. All opinions expressed by podcast participants are solely their own opinion and do not reflect the opinions of Duff & Phelps LLC and its affiliates, Unreal Collective LLC and its affiliates, or any entity which employ us. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. We have not considered your specific financial situation nor provided any investment advice on this show. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Never mind. Bro, that can't be matched. I'm lighting it on fire. Used to run victory laps, and still I'm not even tired. It's all about the time, and about the timing. Yeah, that's what they say. Well, I'ma keep on rhyming, find a way to get it under.